There's a million different podcasts out there that are going to tell you how to buy an apartment building. That's not me. Okay. You can get that everywhere. My niche is, what do you do after you own the building? And that's where I come in.
Welcome to the Action Academy Podcast.
Stand back while I celebrate freedom.
The show where we help you achieve financial independence with the mindsets, methods, and actionable steps from guests who've already earned their freedom.
The flags of freedom fly.
Choose to do what you want.
What you want.
With who you want.
With who you want.
When you want.
When you want.
With another episode today. Now, here's your host, Brian Lubin.
What's up, Action Academy family? This is your host, as always, Brian Lubin, bringing you the mindsets, the methods, and the actionable steps for you to earn freedom in your life and business today. If you are new to the show, we have 5 episodes per week and over 100 episodes for you to go back and binge of multimillionaire entrepreneurs in really quick 5-minute actionable tips that you can use to apply today to make your life just a little bit more free today. This Wednesday episode is a financial case study in the multifamily space where we have none other than Mr. Grant Warrington on. Grant is the CEO and principal owner of Warrington Capital, and him and his wife originally owned 41 units between the two of them, but now they have just closed on a 98 unit during this show. It actually happened right before. So that is fantastic. Congratulations to Grant and his wife. But today we're going to talk about how he went about acquiring these properties, how he went about managing them after he acquired them, and the horror stories that occurred with that, and also some successes. So we go all the way down into the details of what paint and what flooring he uses, to also the mindsets that he had to use to go from buying single family homes to small multifamily to now this 98 units. So we have a lot of actionable advice packed into a 30-minute episode. There is no fluff. We cut it all out. Every single bit of this episode is going to help you in your journey. So I hope that you guys enjoy it. And with that, I'll go ahead and let him loose, Mr. Grant Warrington.
Grant Warrington. Hey, buddy. What's going on?
Hey, buddy. Thanks for having me, man. I'm super excited about this show.
You and I were speaking a little bit off mic, and we were talking about the power of content. So talk to me about your mindset shift from going from a multifamily investor to saying, hey, I don't want to do any content. I want to fly beneath the radar, to now posting and sharing openly.
Yeah, that was tough. And I think we just all grow through it. But yeah, in the beginning, I really didn't want to share a lot. When you put yourself out there, you're vulnerable. And Sure. It's scary because you get a lot of negative feedback, but you also get some great feedback. So along the way, I just started to make these videos. And I really did it in the beginning as a realtor when I was going down that path for a short period of time. I'm not anymore. I have a license. I don't do it anymore. So I started doing it for that. And then it evolved into our apartments and some things I can do. And what I realized was, like, when my wife and I got into this and started watching podcasts, like we were seeing like a rehab was like $3,000 to $4,000, an apartment rehab, bought our building. And we were like, holy shit, man, we're spending $6,500 on this. So it blew our mind. And I thought, you know what? There's a million different podcasts out there that are going to tell you how to buy an apartment building. That's not me. Okay. You can get that everywhere, bigger pockets, anywhere else. But my niche is, what do you do after you own the building? And that's where I come in. Those are all the problems. When we bought the building, we went, oh shit, what do we do for flooring? Mm-hmm. Click plank, glue down. Okay. What kind of paint? What's the paint scheme we're going to use? Now we're going to use this through all our properties. We need to pick this stuff and stick with it because we do everything the same. So I started making content around that where hopefully I can help people and get people through that transitional phase of owning to all of a sudden rehabbing and really operations.
I think that's huge because that definitely is a niche that is missing. Everyone talks about the financing strategies, how you get the units, the stack method, all of the bigger pockets jargon and all that good stuff. And then now it's okay, cool. I've got the property. Now what? Another good example of this is podcasting. So I've got a friend that came on the show. His name's Kevin. And his niche is helping people not start a podcast, because starting a podcast, for everyone listening, because about 60 of you reach out to me a week now, which I love, and I'll still help you all as much as I can. But about 60 people reach out to me every single week and say, hey, man, how do I start a podcast? And that part's the easy part, ironically. Like, you overcomplicate it. The hard part is, how do you grow the show once the podcast starts? Yeah. And so it's the same niche, right? So it's the same thing as you. It's, okay, cool. I've started this thing. I've built this thing. I've purchased this thing. Now what? So let's keep going down that road, man, about the content, because you see a lot of people that are doing really big things. And nobody would have any clue that they're doing really big things because they're not posting content about it. They're not posting anything about it. And then you have your guys like Matt Aitchison, who was just on the show, and he's posting a lot of content about it. And so now he's got more deal flow. He's got more investor capital. He has all X, Y, Z. Talk a little bit about the changes that you've seen and where you see this going.
Yeah, just to talk about that, I have two friends. One owns like 1,200 units and doesn't post a thing. Sure. And my wife and I currently only own 41. We're going to close here tomorrow on a 98 unit with some partners. But
boom.
Yeah. But the point is, like, I only have 41, my wife and I personally. We're at a GoBundance event. I sat down to two guys that are really big in the space, and they knew who I was. And I was like, isn't that amazing? And they knew because of my content. But looking back, they probably don't know who that other person is that has 1,200 units because they just don't create content. They just don't want to. That's the power of content. I had another friend ask me, like, what's your goal with content creation? And I said, I have no idea. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just enjoy doing it. I enjoy putting it out there and seeing reaction to it. But I said, I do know one thing. I'm pretty sure in 5 years, I'm going to be glad I created content instead of not happy that I did it. Like, in five sure. years, I know I'm going to go, good thing I did that.
Absolutely.
I just don't know the outcome of it yet, but I'm in flow and just seeing where it leads me.
The way that I see it is that A, it helps accelerate your connections like crazy.
Yeah.
And so that's already a good thing. B, you're providing value. You're leading with value. So let's get into the mindset piece of this, because you said another part that we were talking about off mic is you're talking about, now that you've gotten your feet wet, you've realized that mindset is one of the biggest hangups that people run into. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So my problem, I'll just really go back. It was my wife and I, we started with very little money. Before we were married, we bought our first rental together. I had 20 grand. She had 20 grand. We put it together and we bought our first single family home. And then we had to rehab it. Needed everything, driveway, roof, everything that you don't want to do. We ran out of money. So we've always had to grow by refinancing, purchasing more. We bought houses on credit card debt, 0% interest credit card. I took a personal loan. She took a personal loan. We're in this 50-50, my wife and I, 100% 50-50. She's out there slugging away just like I am at this. So we've always had this mindset, or I can speak for myself, this come from behind, this Rocky Balboa, this I shouldn't be here mindset, this struggle to get to 41 units. And then something changed. I went to an event and it was Apartment Association of Michigan. I actually flew in my buddy's helicopter. We flew there. We landed at the event, which is at an airport, and we were touring these apartment investors' jets. And my mind just something clicked, which was happened a couple times in my life, but just something went pop. And I was like, holy shit, I need to be around this. This is special. These guys were interested in me and what I was doing. I realized, like, that mindset that got me to 41 units, no one here has that struggle mindset anymore. I need to change my mindset. I need to change my environment, and I need to get in a bigger room. I came home and I joined GoBundance like the next day. My friend had been on me for a few years, Jamie, to join. And yeah. It just wasn't right for me. But right then, man, it clicked. And I was like, dude, I got to do this. I got to get around some people doing some big things in a bigger room.
And then what's been your reaction from that? And people can take this if they're looking into GoBundance or any kind of mastermind in general, they can apply this. Talk about kind of the transition that you went through to entering that room to now you've been in for about a year, 2 years, right?
Yeah, it's coming up on a year. It'll be a year here soon. Yep.
Yeah. So talk about that transition.
So just one of the things that happened to me, just by talking to some GoBros, I was able to reposition a few things, get a loan taken out. And it really, what we were able to do, because we always rehabbed out of cash flow. And that killed us, right? 41 units, when you're rehabbing every single unit out of cash flow, that sucks, man. There's not a lot of money there. But talking to some people, we took out another loan. And we were able now to, we didn't have to rehab out of cash flow anymore. So that was a small piece from talking to some GoBros. Another GoBro I was talking to at the Park City event, and I was telling him, look, we're gonna syndicate going forward, 98 or 100 units or more. So my goal for 2022, syndicate 100 units or more. We're gonna buy a 16 unit personally, my wife and I. And he's, man, 16 unit, it's gonna be a lot of work, isn't it? I said, yeah. He goes, is it going to be rough for you and your wife to do that? I said, yeah, it's going to be a stretch. It's going to take 2 years to get that thing online. It's going to take a long time with all of our own money. And he's like, why don't you just syndicate? Why would you mess with a 16 unit? And I thought, holy shit, you're right. Why am I messing with this 16 unit? That night in Park City, I called my wife. I'm like, this is what we're doing going forward. And she's, thank goodness. Yeah, done with the smaller multifamilies. And that was our goal going forward. Now we're closing tomorrow on. 2 months later, we've joined a team. We went under contract on the 98 unit. And we're closing tomorrow on it. But that's the power of getting in that room and it might sound silly, but you get something that just somebody that just mentioned something that just makes you go, oh, yeah, you're right. That's a good idea. And that's the power of being around people like the people in GoBundance.
Yeah. And it's funny because I talk to a lot of people about GoBundance, right? And a lot of them will say $10,000 a year. Oh my God, how do I get an ROI on that? And it's hard to say, right? Because it's those tweaks. It's not the speakers that get flown in. It's always when you're sitting in the back of the room and you're having a drink with a guy. And then all of a sudden you say, oh man, I'm having this specific problem. And a guy down the bar says, oh, hey, I had that problem 20 years ago. Here's what you do.
Yeah.
So 98 units, man. Congratulations. Yeah. You knocked out your 2022 goal.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we did. We're super excited about that. I want one thing too about that $10,000 for the abundance. I put that on a credit card,
with
no idea of how to pay it.
I did too.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah. And now I put it on and then instantly pay it off. Like I'll have the cash sitting aside and I'll still put on the credit card, pay it off with the points.
Yeah.
But for my first, I didn't have any money at all. Me too. So walk us through that struggle of that 41 units. Was that one deal that you got?
No, that was small deals. Like we built up to 11 units. Maybe there was a duplex, a triplex in there. And then my wife was like, and what we would do is we would get these things. We would take the credit card debt, whatever we could do to buy these back then in 2015, 16, and get no bank loan on them. So we'd get three of them with no mortgages on them. And then we'd do a blanket loan, a commercial loan on them. And after we rehabbed them and we would refinance that, we'd get a big check and then we'd go buy more.
Okay. So how does that work? All right. So you are buying these things cash essentially?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. So let me say, I told you about the first one we bought. The second one we bought, my wife, we weren't married yet. She moved in with me. She owned her condo free and clear. So that was rental number two. So thank goodness for her, free and clear. The third unit we bought, it was only 20 grand in Lincoln Park, right by me. Small little house, needed everything. It was a mess. We happened to be talking to some people about it. And they're like, hey, we'll lend you the 20 grand for 10% interest. And we're like, okay, great. And then I think I sold stocks I've always sold things. So I think I sold stock for the rehab. And then we rehabbed it. The next property was a three unit. And that one was like 52,000 back then in Lincoln Park again, Michigan. And we took out 0% interest credit cards. And she took out a personal loan, my wife. I took out a personal loan and that got us at 50 grand. And then we were rocking and rolling. We took those three, the condo, the 20 grand unit and the triplex, and we put them in a blanket loan after we rehabbed them. And I think we got a check for 80 grand or 90 grand. And we on the refinance and we went forward with that 80 grand and we found three new properties. But this time we had people buy those properties for us, just like they were the bank. And we use that 80 or 90 grand to rehab. And then when we were done in 6 months, we refinanced them all again with a blanket loan paid off each investor. And then we got a check for 120 grand. Then my wife said, this is getting crazy because we're going to have to do, if we're making $100 a month per unit, because we had debt on everything, we're going to have to get like 100 units to get to $10,000 a month. And I'm like 100 houses, we were saying. And I'm like, holy shit, dude, I am so wore out doing this after I had a full-time job. I'm like, I can't do that. So we said in 2017, we said, that's it. We're done. We're not buying houses anymore. We're going into apartment buildings. And we made that shift. And ironically, probably a week after that, I had a guy call me and he's like, hey, listen, find any house you want. I'll buy it for you. And we'll do the same thing. And you just rehab it. You can refinance it out and pay me off. And I'm like, it's so funny. I would have killed for that phone call in the beginning. But at this point, I'm like, you'll get tested. And at this point, I said, you know what? I really appreciate you saying that, but we made the decision. We're not buying homes anymore. We're only buying apartments. And it was tough, but that happens and you will get tested. And if you make a decision and you draw a line in the sand, stick by it. And that's what we did. And that's how we got to the end of the apartment game.
God, that's huge. Yeah, that was definitely the universe testing you. Same thing, right? I quit my job in March. And then I'm like, hey, everybody, I'm going to Greece. Yes, yes. And now we're 3 weeks out. And I was like, let's go. And I've been killing it. I've been hitting my benchmarks outside of my W-2 for 4 months in a row at that point. Had some reserves. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, we got this thing. I know what income's coming in outside of my W-2. And then you already can tell what happened. So I quit. Nothing. Yeah. 3 weeks.
Yep.
And the anxiety, man. Mm-hmm. Whoa, what did I just do?
Yeah.
And go abundance. Yep. Everyone said, hey, this happens every time. Yep. It's to be expected. It's a test. Keep pushing through. Have faith. Follow through with action. You'll be perfectly fine. And now here we are. So let's talk through. Now we got up to your acquisition of your first multifamily. So walk us through that process, because that was another transition, right? You had to shift your identity from a residential single family buyer to now you're like, okay, cool. I want to be a big player now. I want to get the multifamily. Walk us through that transition.
Yeah. And basically I did everything they said to do on podcasts. I was in one of our single families, that one we bought for $20,000 with the inspector. And I said, we're looking to buy apartment buildings now. And he said, oh, why don't you reach out to this woman in Trenton, my hometown, Trenton, Michigan. She owns a bunch of multifamilies. So I reached out to her and she said, here's four different people that I know that have problems with their apartments. I would reach out to those if I were you. And I said, okay, I happen to know one of them. I reached out to him.
Of course you did.
Long story short, we come around. It took forever to close. He almost lost the building. The building was in very bad shape. We ended up buying that. We bought it on a land contract, which is seller financing. $625,000 for a 20 unit, one bedroom apartment in my hometown, all one bedrooms. $125,000 down. We got a 30-year AM, which was huge. And I think we got 28 months was our balloon. 28 months, because he didn't want to wait too long. His father was older that he owned it with.
Sure.
And 16 months later, you know, we bought it for 625. 16 months later, we refied it. I think it was worth $1,030,000. And we got a check. We took a loan out for $800,000. So we got a check for $300,000. 16 months later, that 300 grand, now we're in business again. Now we're rocking and rolling. And we get that 300 grand. And we do a lot of improvements that we still need to do. And an actual client of mine as a realtor said, you know what? I'm just going to live in my house. Will you talk to my landlord? He owns some apartments and I'd like to buy his house. And I thought, oh yeah, I'll talk to him. And I talked to him. I said, I hear you own some apartments. He said, yeah, I'm looking to sell this 11 unit. I said, fantastic. When can we walk it? We walked it Friday and I had a signed say for him like the next day. And that's how we got building number two off market. So both of these were off market. And if I hadn't have quit my W-2, I had quit two W-2s during this period.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah. But if I hadn't put myself in this position as a full-time realtor, I wouldn't have gotten this building. So looking back, it's a lot easier to piece things together, right? When you look back and not when you look forward. So I'm like, good thing I did that, because then that put me in this position where I could purchase this building. And that was amazing. The third building was 1031 exchange. We decided we want to be out of the single family house game. Mm-hmm. We had a $4,000 plumbing repair. I'm about to do a video on this other plumbing repair we just did. Oh man, plumbing repairs just kill you. So $4,000 for this plumbing repair on the single family house, which wipes out our profits for, I don't know, 2-3 years because we have debt on it.
Yeah.
So we're like, you know what? Let's get out of this single family game. So we sold 3 single family homes, just like Monopoly. We put it into a 1031 exchange. 1031 exchange, you have 45 days to identify your next property. After that time, if you don't, you have to pay taxes on it. So we would have had to pay like $70,000 in taxes. And then you have 180 days to close. So 45 days is our time period. We have to identify.
That's so crazy, isn't it?
It was a little scary. So my wife and I are like, you know what? No matter what happens, let's just be comfortable with paying that money. Because we were on day 43 at that point. And we're like,
oh my God, let's
be comfortable. So day 43, an 8-unit apartment building hit the MLS. And I was like, no way, this is it. So I reached out to the realtor and I said, listen, I want this building. He actually knew who I was. Here's another power of social media. He said, I know an agent in your office and I've seen your content and I know you buy apartments. I know you close. And I know if you do this deal, you'll close on it.
And wow. I was like,
that was huge for me. So I said, oh, that's cool. I said, listen, I want to put an offer in, but I need to go show these clients a home. And that's when I realized, okay, this is getting in the way of my multifamily journey. Here I am going off to show clients a home. I know they're not going to. So I went and showed them the home. I came back, long story short, 4 hours later, I had the apartment under contract. Thank goodness, or if it would have stayed on the MLS longer, this was a year ago, it would have shot up in price. They wanted $625,000. It's an 8-unit. A few years before that, we paid $625,000 for our 20-unit, which was 1 bedrooms. This happens to be 2 bedrooms. But 625, and the agent said, you know what? He actually wants 640. I go, dude, it's not going to appraise for 640. It's not even going to get close. It won't even appraise probably for 625. And he's like, I know, but that's what he wants. And we're going to let it sit on the MLS. I said, I'll tell you what.
Wow.
I'll take my $18,000 commission and I'll give it back, not to you, the realtor. I said, I'll give it to your client. I'll give him, he can save my $18,000 commission on my end. Let's just get this deal done. And that got it signed. That got us the deal. It appraised for 600 grand. Rents were 719 average rents on the 8-unit. 2 months later, we had the average rents up to 850. So that increased the value of the building to 700 and some thousand. But appraised when we bought it for 600,000, we got the value up pretty quick. And now average rents are like 950, something like that, a year later. We did really good with that property.
God, that's music to my ears because you don't know how sick I am of residential appraisers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, okay. So you just made some actual calculated changes that you can predict and forecast to raise the value of your property instead of having somebody come to your property that you know is worth because of the comps. Like, oh, okay, this is going to be a $400,000 property. And they're like, 320.
Yeah.
They're just in a bad mood that day.
You know what happened too? On that first 20 unit, when we got it appraised, it was during COVID that our appraisal went out. So we're like, oh no, we know what's going to happen. The appraiser came back and said, your building's only worth 900,000. And we only wanted a loan for 800,000. That's it. It was like 78% loan to value or something. I forget the number, but something like that. So we only wanted a loan for 800,000. And the appraiser said, though, that I'm thinking it's worth 1.1, however the math shakes out there. And the appraiser says, it's only worth 900,000. Here's the comps I used. And the funny thing was, I argued that. And I said, here's the problem. All these comps you used, I pulled up data, statistics on my market and on the cities that he used. And in one of the cities, again, don't quote me on this, but crime, if crime is 150, that's the average data point, and less is better. The crime rate was 400 in the city he comped, and the crime rate in my city is 80. And I'm like, how are you comparing these two cities? It's chaos compared to a safe place to live. The other thing was I managed those properties that he compared. I managed all those. My boss actually had purchased 3 of those comps and he purchased them in extremely distressed condition. And he's comparing those distressed properties to our updated product. So I was able to go back to them. I reached out to my old boss because I had quit that job too. And I said, hey, listen, here's the comps. He's comparing your properties. He's, here you go, dude. Here's all my information. I put 250 grand in each building to get the, to get these raised up. I bought those extremely distressed. So I took all that info and I sent it to the appraiser. Luckily, the appraiser said he'd look at it, looked at it and said, you know what? I think you're correct. And we'll go ahead and we'll give you your loan for $800,000. We'll increase the value to $1,030,000. And I said, that's fine. Perfect. That got me my numbers. That got me where I wanted to be. So
we finally have a success story.
Yeah. Oh man.
Thank you for being a light in the darkness, man. Yeah. Every single house that I've ever bought has underappraised.
Oh yeah. The bank doesn't want to, on a refi, the bank, it's not like a purchase, right? So the bank doesn't want to, I'm sure, come off too much money anyway. They don't want to give you the highest loan to value they can. They'd rather be a little more comfortable, in my opinion. So I think maybe yeah. that's why on the refi, the appraisals are a little lower.
Very true. Very true. So after this 98 unit, what's next? What do you, because now you've knocked out your 2022 goal by not even July. So
yeah. And we played a small role in that too. We weren't the lead sponsors. Luckily, sure. The lead sponsors were, they got like 780 million in assets under management and they asked us to jump onto them. So we were extremely fortunate, but this gets us in the direction we want to go in. We want to be in large multifamily from now on going forward. And eventually we're going to do our own deal, but this was just a huge stepping stone for us. So we couldn't be more excited about that. The other great thing is jumping on with this team, they're going to close on 3 or 4 more deals this year. So that's exciting. They're looking in Alabama, Florida, Georgia, and we're just going to continue with this team and hopefully do, you know, 1, possibly 2 more for us this year. So really excited about that.
That's awesome, man. Let's spend the last 15 minutes here going into some best practices that you've come up with about stabilizing your apartments, because that's what you said. Your niche isn't, you're not going to help people buy apartments, but what to do after you buy them. So for you, walk us through step by step. What did you figure out were like the best practices to be able to remodel these and have these stabilized?
Yeah. So the problem with what we did is we didn't have a lot of money. So we needed to be very cautious. Like when we bought that 20 unit, everybody says, I think the average rents on that 20 unit were $490. It was just horrible. And at that point, we felt they should have been like $650 to $700 at that point. And so what happens is no one was paying. So you get a tough tenant base that doesn't want to pay and isn't really going to want to pay at $650. So to be honest with you, the best thing to do would have been to try and work with them, cut our losses, and just get everybody out and rehab the whole property and get the building producing and where it needs to be, because it needed so much work. But we couldn't do that. So we had to be very careful and raise rents gradually. So that was something that kind of hindered us. But when one thing for people to understand, I hear all the time, hey, this, when people try to sell us a building, they're like, I got long-term tenants. I got some tenants that have been in here 10 years, 20 years. And to me, I'm like, oh shit, that's a problem.
Yeah, red flag.
Yeah. And they don't think that. And why it's a problem is because the rents are so low that the owner isn't fixing anything, because he's not making, he probably doesn't have a mortgage. Yeah. And he's not really going to fix anything. So rents are extremely low. Maintenance is very bad. And people probably are not paying or can't live there at the higher rent. So you're going to have a major problem when you come in. And I think a lot of people don't realize that, like, you're going to have a major problem. So you need to be aware of that getting into the situation and plan for it accordingly.
And then when you're remodeling, what were your like floor tips, paint tips that you had?
Yeah. So that was the thing. And that took us like 3 months. Like I said, it took forever to close this. The owner almost lost the building. We had to go to court. He had another long story. Sorry, but he had a mortgage on it and he paid it off in like 2011. That company went out of business. We couldn't prove that he paid off the mortgage. We had to go to court to prove it. So we had a lot of time to try and figure out what we're going to do, thankfully. When you buy a building, that's the next thing is there's not a lot of podcasts or information about what do you do in your building? What about common area carpeting or common area flooring? Or are you going to use glue down? This was our biggest. You're going to use glue down or click plank flooring in your apartments? What kind of wall paint are you going to use? What kind of color schemes? And those are some things. And just to let people know, we use agreeable gray on our walls. We use CHB on our ceilings, white. And we use semi-gloss white on our trims and our doors. That's what we do. And we use semi-gloss in the closet. So we paint our stuff a little different. We just don't come in and spray the whole box one color. But that's what we do. That's what's worked for us. And that's the kind of things I like to share with people, that they can take that info and go, okay, that works. Now, when we get a concrete floor, we use glue down. We use glue down vinyl plank. If there's an issue with the floor, or if we've had fiberboard on our flooring and it's a soundproof barrier, the company has to come in and put Luon down over top of that, and then they'd have to glue the plank. That doesn't make sense. The Luon costs extra money, so we put the floating click plank floor in that situation. Now, that's something we do. The other thing, Sherwin-Williams does all our flooring. Sherwin-Williams is like one of the largest flooring companies or flooring product users in the United States. A lot of people don't realize that. Yeah.
Sherwin-Williams.
Yeah, their flooring department. So those are like kind of some of the things I like to share, because I can share that on a national level. And I tell people, hey, get a quote. You're probably not going to be able to beat their labor prices. It's crazy. And they do such volume that they get great discounts on material. So that's who we use for our flooring.
They're cranking out that agreeable gray.
Yeah, they are. That's behind me here, agreeable gray.
It looks very agreeable, man. It looks very agreeable. Oh, thanks. I would not argue with that shade of gray behind you.
Yeah.
It's just too nice. You're talking about your tenant base. You're talking about, obviously, people will listen to this and they'll say, this dude has got $700 tenants. Is he in a war zone? Like, I understand you're in Michigan. Like, down here in Atlanta, it ain't like that. Like, we're $2,000 on the low end now.
Yeah.
We're going crazy. Talk a little bit about, so are you purchasing like C-class? What class are you looking at here?
Yeah, they're C-class, probably because of the age of the buildings, 1960s. Everything in my neighborhood's probably built in the 50s to 60s. That's what we're purchasing. But like for Atlanta, let me just use that for instance. Let's say it's $2,000 rent, right? When you're keeping up on market rent, everybody's keeping up on market rent. It's a great neighborhood. But let's say there's a shitty building, and you've probably driven by a shitty building where the shit's overgrowing, the roof needs work. And that building's only $1,200 a month. And you're like, huh, it's a shitty building. It's got low rent. It's the same thing here. It's a great neighborhood, great blue collar area, but the rents are so low because a lot of the owners in this area, it's generational wealth, and they just pass the buildings on. There's no mortgages on the properties, and they just keep the rents low so there's no turnover. But the other trade off to that is they don't make repairs. A lot of the buildings around here have metal sliding doors, you know, from 1960. The window, nothing's been updated. So we see a lot of that. So that's the problem. So the problem is you get a tenant that can afford to live in that $490 unit, but probably can't afford to live in the $700 unit, which is where it's going to be once we do these repairs and bring that up to market. So you're going to have some turnover, and you're going to have some tenants that are going to be extremely mad at you. And when we take a building over, it's always the situation where they feel, and they tell us that we've been here first and we'll be here long after you. So that's, you kind of got to prepare yourself for that in some of these situations.
Yeah, I would imagine, because especially ones that have been there for 10 years, like All right, man, maybe we'll just do self-storage.
And I want to let people know too, we don't just come in and jack up rents, because it's not something we do. Because if we feel that tenant's living in a 490 unit, we're not jacking it up to 700, but we do have to increase it because our taxes are going up. All these, our insurance is going up. So we do have to increase that. And then eventually the tenant, usually in our case, has ended up moving out, or we will have to, if they are a problem. We've had some tenants that are really disrupting the whole community. And if they're a problem, we will give them a 30-day notice here in Michigan, and we will move them out.
Yeah. And then that just speaks to purchasing in different governments too, right? Because some areas are very difficult to remove, like New York. Yeah. It's a nightmare to remove tenants. So awesome, man. So what's your next level? Because I know you originally said like the 10,000 was the original goal. Is that still your benchmark that you and your wife are going for coming in per month? Or is that raised now? What's your goalpost? What's your next one?
Yeah, I would say With us, this is like the first year we're actually like my wife and I will talk about it. We'll make purchases on the credit card. We don't have to look at it and go, oh no, like we need to really, we've always been on such a strict budget that this is the first year that we're like, okay, we can breathe a little bit. So right now we're enjoying that breath. We're planning vacations. We didn't take vacations. Like we really had to really budget to get to where we, because we were constantly buying more rentals, constantly rehabbing. It took a lot. So this is the first year, like I said, we're breathing a little bit. That 10 grand is, we're hitting that here and there now. So now that's okay. That's cool. So now I would say we'd be raising it to 20 is probably going to be our next 20 grand a month. And we were just reading something today and my wife and I were like, oh, we need to start looking at 70 grand a month. So we're constantly looking forward, but I'd say for me, probably 20 grand is going to be the next goal.
Nice, man. It's awesome watching you on the journey, man. It's awesome. Thanks. It's awesome. Thank you for coming on and sharing all this with the people. Where can people find you?
Yeah, they can find me a couple different places. Instagram, I post every day. Grant Warrington, at Grant Warrington. On TikTok, I got a lot of followers there, at Grant Warrington there as well. And then if you want to know a little bit more about us and what we're doing with our large apartment buildings, warringtoncapital.com.
Ooh, Warrington Capital. That sounds like some Cape Cod money, man.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Warrington no, it's not, Capital. Maybe one day. Sounds like an old sailboat.
Ah, nice.
All right, brother. Appreciate it. Thank you for coming on. Everyone, this has been Grant and Brian with the Action Academy podcast, signing off.